Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, hello. I am the one and only Dr. Shawande Mustakeem coming on to keep it going with the class roundup. Whether it's on a Sunday or any day of the week, I wanted to come on and keep us empowered for those who want to be empowered about what is happening not only in Dr. Mustakeem's classes, but more importantly, what does the historical and the historical learning look like between women and crime and the evolution of American history, as well as another Fall 22 class that I'm teaching called Mapping the World of Quote-Unquote Black Criminality. Hello and welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. So we're moving into week four, week five. Over the past week, I have done a lot. We have done a lot. The students have learned a lot. First of all, I ended up going out of town while students were doing research for their case reviews, and I went out of town to go give a talk at Georgia Tech University on not only my two-time award-winning book, Slavery at Sea, but also thinking about the future of memory. And I think that not only do I think, I know that it dovetails into how do we teach the past. How do we teach the future about the past? And more importantly, how do we keep the present deeply informed about the importance of understanding the interconnection of the many worlds? So going on to the Mapping the World of Black Criminality, we're moving into another unit that is called Gendered Crimes, Racialized Expectations. We're actually spilling over. And in that section, I ask, historically, where and how does gender factor into historic memories of violence, both locally and historically and historically, while also asking, how are black women and black men remembered in the realm of policing black girls, black women, and black men? Moreover, what does policing look like? How does policing change from the 1880s, the 1890s, and through into the 20th century, even through into the 1930s, but how does it influence the coming future of the 21st century of policing everyday black lives? And the way that I've chosen to get through this, at least through over the past week or so conversation, has been looking, first of all, between three articles. So the students moved from the 1880s into the 1890s, and then through into the 20th century through to the 1920s. So they looked at an article, Dr. LaShawn Harris, looking at the execution of the youngest black female in America, but more importantly within Virginia. That article is entitled The Commonwealth of Virginia Against Virginia Christian, Southern Black Women, Crime and Punishment in Progressive Era Virginia, came out Journal of Social History. So I would encourage that for those who want to learn about the execution of the youngest black female in America, there is the history. As we think about the death penalty, we often leave it only at black men and black boys, but we also have to think about what does violence look like, both in state hands, but more also, what violence would play out that would make the state render someone, a girl, unavoidable within the memory and the moment. So the students read that, as well as reading an article entitled Armed with a Knife in Her Bosom, Gender, Violence, and the Carceral Consequences of Rage that came out in the Journal of African American History. And that came out 2015 in a special issue called Gendering the Carceral State. There, the students were reading and talking amongst themselves, and it was a page-by-page turner that looked at a love triangle, a cheating boyfriend who got caught out by his girlfriend while he was out bar hopping with another woman that he found to be quite desirable. Nonetheless, a knife was pulled out, multiple stabs ensued, and then the real question that was posed within this particular article was, What does violence look like outside of the boundaries of slavery? What does freedom look like? And more importantly, what does policing look like of black people and a 21-year-old black female that would end up killing a 19-year-old and leaving her stabbed multiple times in an alleyway in Kansas City, Missouri in 1891. So you can imagine, these students were all over it like, what? We thought this was the 1990s. So they also, we also got to read an article by Dr. Douglas Flo, Fighting and Cutting and Shooting and Carrying On, Saloons and Dives in New York, 1890 to 1970. I forgot to say that The Arm with a Knife in Her Bosom was authored by yours truly, Dr. Shawande Mustakeem, again, within that very important special issue, Gendering the Carceral State, that did come out in the Journal of African American History. So in order to allow a deeper understanding of black men and their place within New York and saloons and the promoting of a whole other version of black masculinity, students read Dr. Flo's article and also discussed what does this mean as we begin to think about the 1880s, the 1890s, and well into the 20th century. That made, all of this made for quite the interesting conversation. And even more for me, because following this, the same week, I returned to class, and students were reading reading Dr. Mustakeem's article, Arm with a Knife in Her Bosom, Gender Violence and the Carceral Consequences of Rage. But they also read, again, this is in the Women in Crime and the Evolution of American History, they read a student who I trained first as an undergrad, and now Dr. Lauren Henley is taking students to the next level. She is a professor at the University of Richmond and doing amazing work, as I always saw the moment that she walked in. And students read her very important article, Devilish Deeds, that looks at serial murders within 1880s Texas, really within a year's period, where we see a multitude of victims, black and white, and more importantly, the open violence that is detonated not only within white households but externally, and looking at this long serial killing of black females. What is it that would make the public care? Where and how do we begin to make place of it within Texas history? It definitely made for some very important conversations that students were learning. Not only were they reading an article by an alum, but also, and also to read an article by their professor that really put things into real time. Now, to keep it going, where I want you all to know, when I started off, I said, oh, they've learned a lot. That wasn't even just it. It went even deeper. So as of yesterday, every student in both classes, they were required to submit what I call a case review study, Hands on the Past Case Review, where each student was given a case that was from the 19th century. And within their cases, they were reading, I told them, fortunate for you, there wasn't handwritten, or dare I say, in cursive. They got lucky that I went to the archives and I pulled sources that were typed, that they were able to look at death in the American past by way of homicidal violence through guns, by homicidal violence in a variety of ways, but more importantly, looking at death as an archive to begin to tell us about the everyday lived experience as well as the dying experience. Wow! The conversations were, and the emails were overwhelming. Dr. Mustakeem, we should be able to do more of this. This is amazing to be able to essentially almost fall through the ceiling of a medical hearing, find out, well, how did this person die? How did the state mark this person's death? What does it mean in the memory? And then to think, what if you were left to determine what the truth was? Well, straightforward doesn't really come in the 19th century, as my students reminded me. And it was interesting because within the women in crime class, they were given black and white cases, whereas within the black studies course, Mapping the World of Black Criminality, they were only given black cases because that course is looking at black crime, but also looking at the policing of black lives. So it's very interesting to bring in the medical world, the legal world, and then to also think, what could the everyday, what could have happened to stop the detonation of violence? And so that really opened up as students were thinking about one moment that if you had did this different, everything could have been different. Whether we're talking about on a holiday that somebody pulls out a knife to sort of flex, like, look, back it up. And then someone else is like, you pull out a knife, I got a gun. So the students then beginning to see the multi-optics in all of it. Again, cases of violence, black, white, female, male, it took the learning and it is taking the learning to the next level that is setting me up and setting the students up as we prepare to go into the 20th century. So we've gone a lot of different directions, moving through the spheres of slavery, slavery at sea, as well as thinking about what freedom can look like, not only within just the general American experience, but also to think about freedom for newly freed black people. So where we're going and where we're already starting to go, and this is now moving into another direction where we have to begin to look at the power that pop culture has in shaping the historical and historical memory. Now, what I'm getting at is originally the students were slated within the map in the world of quote-unquote black criminality. They were supposed to be looking at the film that stars Tashina Arnold, looking at the Lena Baker case, because Lena Baker is the first black woman to be executed in Georgia. Unfortunately, and, well, depends on commercially how we read this. So, do we pay? Is it a part of a membership? I decided, well, hold on now, where's the accessibility? Amazon and let's just say many other platforms do not see the current value for that movie to have access. So that means that there was no access for the students, and so I decided to shift the perspective. So students now are going to be moving to the most iconic black film that I would say from the 1980s that some of us and a great many of us will remember that a movement even connected with it. So students are getting ready to start The Color Purple, directed by Steven Spielberg, starring a great many familiar faces. And this is because we're getting ready to move into another unit that is really looking at Georgia, looking at the perception of the South, and thinking about the everyday interactions, and then also what happens when somebody steps outside the boundaries of social order. What happens if all of a sudden you decide to fight back? And what happens to you? How does America, North America, and how does the South respond to that? So, again, the students are going to be looking at that particular film. Women in Crime, in the Evolution of American History, after I told them, I said, you all have busted a whole lot of brain cells and pulled out these amazing nuggets from your mind to make sense of the past, let's take another moment for a visual. And so I decided to do something different because we're moving into this unit that I just kind of loosely connect with those who are lost in history or blurred, as I tend to say, the blurred female icons and female legends. Within this unit, I throw out for the students, many crimes, many women, many girls, many icons are remembered while hundreds and thousands go forgotten most through the silences, i.e. we do not talk about them. How does pop culture shape memory? Who wants to remember outlaws, murderesses, thieves, and child killers? Who is worthy of remembrance? Who is best left dead and long since gone? How and does race play a factor in the memory project, if you will, because all of this is a project. It's a campaign. It's a whole other vying for memory. It's a battle for memory. Where do women and girls who commit crimes fit in local and national memory? And where does the American education see fit to include or not these female icons and female legends? Lastly, I ask, what and where is the legacy and thus the cost of the crimes? So within this section, students are going to be thinking about an 1899 case within St. Louis connected with Frankie Baker, while also looking at the legacy, the unending legacy of Lizzie Borden. What? Lizzie Borden? Yeah. Since Lifetime clearly has a lifetime contract on ensuring that no one ever forgets Lizzie Borden, I thought, well, thanks, Lifetime. We're going to go earlier. We're going to go earlier than where, well, there's plenty of movies and documentaries about Lizzie Borden, which is, again, quite the contrast in a lot of ways. Who holds value? If in one class we can't find anything on Lena Baker, but golly, there's a whole lot on Lizzie Borden, why is she such an icon that Hollywood continues to invest in? What is that saying to the future? So my students, we're looking at that, but we're also looking at it. I decided to go another direction. We are looking at a 1975 film that is called The Legend of Lizzie Borden. And I warn the students that you're going to see actors that you don't, or actresses and actors that you do not know, that is not a part of your generation. And through it, the students were not done. But the students, as they were leaving, they were letting me know, we were never taught about Lizzie Borden. So that's what makes and will make for the conversation to be even more interesting. The world assumes memory. The future assumes memory. The future and the present act like they know, but then they don't know. But hold on now, wait a minute. What do you know? Who do you know? Who are the icons that your parents and your grandparents and your great-grandparents, if you just say one name, then they'll say, oh, yeah, we know that. But guess what? Your children, they don't know. Your great-grandchildren, they don't know. So that then goes back to Lifetime. What is it about you all and this Lizzie Borden thing? However, let's begin to think about how is it portrayed. Let's look at it. I didn't want the students to guess. I didn't want my students to have to try and call their parents and grandparents and great-grandparents. Nope. Let's look at the same movie that somebody close to you would have heard of or seen. And then what sense do we make of it within the current memory of a woman who allegedly killed and allegedly got away with murder? Not last century, but the century before. So going back to the case reviews, that's why it became so instructive all over again for both classes to be reminded about what do we know about the 1880s? What do we know about the 1890s? While the world will say, well, history is only the 20th century, no. Let's think about what and how memory has been shaped through a variety of means, most of all through the silences, but also the heavy hand of pop culture. So all those current and future and aspiring directors, first of all, I don't think we need any more Lizzie Borden movies and documentaries. I can guarantee that within both classes we have at least 25 what should have already been icons that we never forgot. So to counterbalance the students' learning, they're also looking at newspapers at the same time that the case happens. That is so fascinating because then students are realizing there is so-called truth, and then there is the shaping of truth. So that means if somebody dies today, how is that portrayed in the news? And then what is the truth? Is it what a journalist would say that it is? Is that the end-all, be-all? What do we hold as the most important truths? So I hope that everyone is hearing and being empowered to begin to think about as you teach, as you expose, make accessible to the future, remnants of the past, who do we privilege? And then also, who do we say, nah, I'm good. Nobody needs to know about you. None of us would ever dare to admit it. But it is true. In telling one story, then there's going to be the multitudes that remain untold and thus unremembered. I'm doing my best to try to cover all sides, many sides, hitting against the stereotypes, really trying to take students deeper and deeper and deeper than ever before. And I'm hoping that in the future, in the days and the weeks ahead, that I can get even more voices a part of this conversation so that all of us are empowered on, let's take learning to the higher level if and when you see the value to expose students to it. So again, I am the one and only Dr. Shawnee Musakeem, and I'm doing what I choose to do best. That is, expose, begin to facilitate deeper conversations, because at the end of the day, I could have given the whole class one paragraph and said, here's your primary source analysis. Tell me what you think. And as the students reminded me, oh, well, typically in the past, we'd only be given half of a page, but then we would have had to look at somebody else's theory or somebody else's friend to tell us what that means. Wow. Are we really going deep? So I asked that. I probed that. I pushed that so that future parents of any kind, future teachers of any kind, future professors of any kind, and equally, future students. You're here. It's all about the learning. How deep you want to go? Do you only want to read one account and then say that's all that there is? As I reminded some of us in class, look, to say that this isn't new or I'm not surprised, that's not going deep. Let's begin to think deeper in the connection and the interconnection of cases that can begin to tell us so much more than we are willing to begin to bring to the forefront in our conversation. So, again, I'm just doing what I do best and really doing what I was brought here on this planet to do even more of, which is to get us to remember, to remind us about the importance of memory and remembrance in all of it. So this is only scratching the surface. If you have been in the classes, then yeah, you might have known. However, I'm doing my best to round it up. Tell all of us, where are we? Where are we going? It's about to go deeper. So again, I am the one and only Dr. Shawnee Musakeem, and right now, both classes, we're moving into films because it's that time of the semester. So we're going to be looking at The Color Purple, as well as in the other class, they've already started The Legend of Lizzie Borden that came out in 1975. No, have no interest in looking at the 21st century and its depictions of Lizzie Borden, because in the same way that we make Jesse James just get more blonder, then we also try to make Lizzie Borden even smarter. And that's interesting, because the students don't even know that. They don't even know who she is, nor do they understand why the likes of Lifetime are so obsessed. However, even more that's going to be coming so you can be empowered. All right now, I am the one and only Dr. Shawnee Musakeem, and I'm doing what I do best to come on and empower you. So stay tuned. Even more is coming, and I look forward to telling you about the conversations and even more what's on the other side of these conversations and these film screenings in the week ahead. All right now, I'll talk to you soon. Of course, I will empower you soon. All right now, bye-bye.